meeting?
Yep.
Okay. It's 2:00. I'll call the meeting to order. Please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance. You can stay, Sally.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call, please.
Conklin?
Here.
Grunsch? Needhammer?
Here.
Page?
Here.
Salomon?
Here.
Quorum present.
And we did hear from Commissioner Grunsch that he did have a medical appointment prior to this.
I think he just pulled in. I'm looking.
Yeah, I saw a car that looked similar in color, but I thought it was a different one.
Moving slow.
Keep dialing.
Talking to Barb.
Oh, is he down there?
Maybe.
We don't know yet.
Still talking to Barb.
I don't think it was his car.
The plot thickens.
No, that's a Cadillac.
Okay.
This is the Merc. Or is it Lincoln? Okay, well, this is the first time we've ever had one of these. So you received the proposed budget on Tuesday at the commission meeting. Hopefully you've had a chance to start looking over and have some questions with regards to it. I've got a couple points I think we probably might want to talk about, but I don't know if you want to lead off with questions, if you want me to make some statement, or what you're looking to accomplish out of this.
I open up to my fellow commissioners. Do you have a purpose or a starting point?
Well, I think if you could make some comments, Mike, just kind of general outline.
Sure.
The one thing I was hoping, you know, you could go over the graphs a little bit.
Yeah.
You know,
that's we've been talking about, and I think I have for a number of years, and I don't know if I'm just, it seems like ever since I've been here, I've been kind of pessimistic and tried to be conservative on the budget. I remember my first meetings with the department heads as I was going through the budget. You know, the economy wasn't looking great. So that's kind of just the way I'm wired. And I tried to make comments with regards to, you know, we've got this big ballooning MERS debt that's out there. Mm-hmm. And that's going to encumber us and I think limit our flexibility to some degree over the next coming years. The good news is that we took that action with regards to going away from a defined benefit program quite a number of years ago, well over 10. So there is light on the horizon for us compared to other communities that still have this type of pension and are trying to figure out how to fund it. Based on the chart that you were just pointing out, that gold one that shows the fund balance declining significantly over the next few years, at least we never go negative, and it starts turning around 2025. So if we can hang tight until 2025, and we don't get walloped, and I'm kind of concerned about this as well too, that the economy is going to start running out of gas. I see more and more signs of, how many auto loans are delinquent, or housing starts, is there another housing bubble out there? There just seem to be signs that I'm picking up, and maybe I'm being oversensitive to it, that the economy, we've had a 10-year growth in the economy coming off a really bad spell, and I'm concerned that we're going to have some other type of dip or recession coming up. And those two things make me a little bit, somewhat concerned with regards to, watching our bottom line tightly for the next few years. We're still doing a lot of great things. I mean, this budget has, when people drive around this town this summer and they see North Lake Street done, they see Front Street going to be done, they see potentially Cedar and Terrace Street getting done, and they're going to see, even though it's not our street, they're going to see M75 getting done through town, they're going to be amazed by the amount of growth that's going on. We got the Boyne Valley Trail that, if all goes well, that'll be going in as well, too. We're able to help out with the Ray Acres project. And those are all great projects. But a lot of them are funded by grants where we're not really having to put out a lot of new money into it. The Boyne Valley Trail, we're only putting in about $35,000. So we got all these great things going on, and that's good. But I think people are going to think that we have more money than we do. In some respects, that's a really good thing, because I think we're able to leverage our resources really well. But I think, as I mentioned before, we've been doing so many good things every year, whether it's this facility or other infrastructure projects or whatever, that I think we kind of take it for granted now. And we've set the bar real high up here, and it's going to be hard to maintain that going forward. So I think we're going to have to watch ourselves for the next couple of years.
Well, along those lines, you know, you sort of said that in your letter here.
Yeah.
And also, you know, the grant, wherever that is, really...
It's in my letter.
In the letter, it really shows that.
Procedure but, here, is that green?
No. I was talking about the overall issue.
Talking about that chart?
That chart,
that right. Graph.
So the question was that it's one thing to talk about it, but, you know, what... And if we just say that every year, then we go down this path, you know. But if we talk about it or try to address it earlier on in our budget process, at least we can manage our risk a little better.
Yeah.
So in this budget, I saw all that, but I didn't see how this budget helps us to
start moderating
moderating the risk for those future that 5-year period where we start to draw down to a lower level than our guidelines say we should be.
Correct.
In our fund.
85%. I mean, there's a couple quick ways. I mean, I could have balanced that budget really easy.
Sure.
We could have just said we're not going to do either Cedar or Terrace.
Right.
That we're going to stop some of our capital improvement projects, and we're going to batten down the hatches for a bit. I mean, there's a couple things that, you know, could spin this, at least for this fiscal year.
Right.
Better. You know, if we are fortunate enough and it works out that we get this Category B funding, that could be potentially $250,000 for the good. Obviously, I don't want to bank on that. That's why it's not included in the budget.
Right.
At some point, if all goes well, when it goes well, we have about $243,880 that's supposed to come back that we're supposed to get from the state, the final payment on the open space purchase.
Mm-hmm.
That's the 10% that they haven't provided us at this point yet. So there's some opportunities to do that. But you're correct. I mean, if we're really to the point where and a lot of this can vary. I mean, I'm still trying to figure out what's going to be coming from the state going forward as well, too, as the new administration changes. Is that going to be good or bad?
Well, I guess one of my thoughts was, you know, the things that we have most control over, of course, are capital expenditures, right?
Mm-hmm.
And is it time to think about sort of a plan B of stretching out our capital expenditures? I assume that took into account planned capital expenditures, did it?
Yes.
If we had a plan to stretch those out a little
Correct.
Bit, would that help minimize our risk? I mean, or maybe there's more than one different scenario that can help.
Correct.
Same, because what you talked about earlier, I think, is really relevant, that if this is good, as long as the economy doesn't tank. If the economy tanks, then we may be in a good deal.
We'll have more pressure.
We'll have a lot more pressure. So if we thought about that now, and those things that we have control of, is that something that we should be considering as a commission to, you know, manage our risk, I guess?
Correct. Sort of thing. Well, I'm glad you're thinking that far ahead with regards to that, because that's kind of the discussion I wanted to engender by doing this.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, again, as I also mentioned in my letter, we have a pretty good history of coming out better than our budgets
right.
portray. And in some respects, unless the economy really goes to heck and the tax revenues really take a hit, I'm hoping that we'll do better on this than we think, but I wouldn't count on it.
Hope's okay, but...
Yes, I know.
But, you know, having something...
And that's part of the mix on putting one of these together and trying to plan ahead. Part of it's art, part of it's science.
Right, of course. Right.
I wish I could predict it with great certainty, and hopefully as we work through on the coming up with the financial forecasting models, we can refine and hone in on this. We're not there yet, though. Mm-hmm. So,
is the MERS required? Is there a state that at 2025 you have to be fully funded?
No. But right now we're taking probably the most conservative approach. And as I mentioned in my letter as well, too, we get a new actuarial from them every year. And it comes in about June. And as I mentioned to the department heads when I shared this with them as well, too, I mean, I'm real anxious to see what that tells us in June. MERS has a history of coming back, and they change their assumptions if, you know, if they aren't generating the 7.75% rate of return and things of that nature. Up, if you read, and I was reviewing the last actuarial we got, and they're saying that they're still about, they were, have been averaging above 8% for the last, I forget how many years they said it was. So I'm comfortable with that, but that could change too. It could go better, it could go, but they have a history of going worse. It's just kind of like a lot of these GASB requirements and things like that. People are trying to limit their risk and exposure by coming up with worse and worse assumptions all the time. It's what it seems like to me. So, I mean, if we stopped paying MERS, we could do it. We don't have to make the $500,000 contribution.
You're just putting it off the inevitable.
You just kick the can down.
Yes.
At a greater cost, right?
Potentially, yeah, because you have less money that's being invested in getting some return on, and the returns that they're getting on their money is much better than what we're getting at the banks and the credit unions with regards to it. So I guess to answer your base question, no, we don't have to make that payment right now, but it would have financial implications, and would also, we get on the state's naughty list where you have to set up a, you know, we saw some other communities that fell below, I forget what percentage it was, 60-some percent or whatever it was, that they had to come up with a plan of action of how are you going to deal with that.
You don't want to be in the naughty list.
And that could hurt us, you know, if for some reason we had to go out for financing or something like that on some other project.
Like a bond, your bond rating?
Yes. Like, yeah, if we wanted to go out and fund something else. So a lot of this I think we can temper just by knowing that we're having to deal with this issue out there. And again, even if you know the budget I presented, you know, showed us just about a $200,000 deficit, just because we put it in the budget, as I always say, doesn't mean we have to spend it. There may be areas where we can cut that back, and you know, if that's the goal, as the commission says, you know, yeah, Mr. Kane will approve this budget, but we want you to bring it in balanced. In other words, it just means more work we have to do during the rest of the year.
Right. Yeah. I wonder if it would be worth the exercise, since again, it's our capital expenditures we can control, to at least go through the exercise with department heads of saying, if we had to, if we found ourselves in a position where we needed to stretch out our capital expenditures over a longer period of time in order to satisfy the commission's desire not to bring a fund balance to, what would that look like, and what would we do that would have the, you know, the least impact? And putting off, kicking stuff down can down the road has implications, right?
Yeah.
But if you were in a situation where you needed to do that, what would be the way that would have the least impact?
I think it's important to take a look at, and if you go to your budget on page, it's in, hang on, get the right spot, behind tab 2, page 2-6, which is our transfers out. Because in some respects, some of the funds we do some help to. I mean, Roy's making a contribution to the cemetery fund, almost never to the senior fund, the senior center. The ambulance, that always needs a contribution. And just for your information, what's in here right now is kind of a worst-case scenario, assuming that Boyne Valley Township does leave us.
Mm-hmm.
We're thinking we're getting some traction with regards to the proposal that we made with them. Was that last week? Or was it 2 weeks ago now?
Last Tuesday.
They're going to be having a special meeting on Tuesday to talk about this. It's
tomorrow, Tuesday.
At 6 p.m. Yes. So So, but like transfers to the fire, so anyway, transfers to the ambulance fund, we're making those contributions in addition to contributions to the, from the other participating agencies as well too. So we could possibly tweak that a little bit. Fire department fund, you can see that's been pretty steady, and that's pretty much a match of what the other municipalities do as well too, so there isn't that much flexibility there. The rubbish fund, that's one that Tim and I have talked about. You know, do we need to do a spring and a fall cleanup of 3 weeks each? Or could we do it just in the spring or just in the fall? Or do we make them 4 weeks each? You know, there may be ways to tweak and mm-hmm. do that one as well too. The street funds are usually the biggest places, that's the biggest capital outlay. Now, if you start stretching that, and we've made huge strides and our infrastructure is in really, really good shape. If we had to take some area, we could slow that down for the next 5 years and do less paving and things of that nature. We probably want to keep up on our maintenance program just so things, you know, the annual maintenance, but major reconstructions we could probably put off for a while. And you saw in my letter how much, you know, how many mills that equates to, 4 or 5 mills in there. So I just bring that up just so you know, where outside money goes to. In looking at the budget that was presented to you, you know, I did reach out to the department heads and said, okay, we were looking at a $400,000 deficit when we, as we were going through it, and we were able to cut that in half. And one of the things that we did was we put up the purchasing of a police car. Mm-hmm. And Jeff's, you know, come up with an alternate schedule that is reflected in this deficit in the chart that I've got in here. But we tried to push that back a couple of years where we can mm-hmm. to try and, you know, hang on to the money as long as we can. There may be some other areas that we can do that in, but a lot of our costs are staff costs.
Of course, yeah.
And there isn't all that, other than these transfers out, there isn't that much in the general fund that we can hold off in. The police equipment is probably the biggest area. Parks is probably the second biggest area. Water, wastewater, those, you know, those are supposed to be self-sufficient on their own. So I guess my overall point, I'm getting a long way to tell you, when we're looking at the general fund deficit, there's only certain areas that we can cut.
Right, that's right. This is the page I was looking at too. This is the one, and yep. pretty much roads that we would have the opportunity, if we needed to stretch things out, we could.
Correct.
And my question is there a plan to do that if the commission decided that we wanted to?
No, not yet. But that's the types of things I wanted to get on the table and start having discussions right, yeah. with regards to, and say, you know, are you willing to do that? Or, you know, some communities will, you know, it drives me nuts, but some communities will say, well, geez, we got a MERS problem or a funding problems, and they'll just borrow more money.
Right.
You know, they'll bond for it or something of that nature. And unless you have a new source of revenue coming in, you've just increased your cost somewhere along the way because mm-hmm. you have more. You're going to have to pay interest on that at some point, so you're paying more. So I could be, you know, at the end of the day, I see those concerns. I mean, if some of these grants come through that we're putting out, I mean, we could do a lot better. I think we really want to take a look at are there new avenues of money? And one of those that I think we might be make sense for us to take a look at again is doing a low and moderate income survey mm-hmm. again. The upcoming census is not going to supposedly collect economic data, wages and that type of stuff. And I forget, Scott could tell me the name of the study that
American
they
used. American Community Survey.
Yes. That they base a lot of their assumptions on, and we just don't have a lot of faith in that. Mm-hmm. And until we do another survey, and I just don't feel the last survey was done appropriately.
Yeah, because it really didn't come in as we anticipated. Mm-hmm. And we had the data from before, and it didn't really... We thought there was too big of a change in 4 years or 5 years. What was it?
So I think that's, and I've talked to Barb and Patrick about seeing if we could do that in-house for a portion of the city. That would open up some other grant opportunities. And I mean, we've missed it going forward during the last 2 years.
But with that being said, has the grant opportunities dried up also?
They are not as robust as they had been in years past with regards to that. And doesn't look like that's going to be changing on the federal level for at least a couple of years at best. But there's still funds that are out there. I mean, one of the projects that I did put in this budget with regards to a grant is getting $408,000 from the state for the pavilion. That one is far enough along that I have a high degree of confidence on that. There is no guarantees that that can come forward, but a lot of that is, that's money in and money out. So if it doesn't come through, we just don't do the project, or we do a scaled-down project based on the funds that have been raised and available through the Charlotte County Community Foundation. There's like $50,000 or $60,000 that's sitting in that account right now. So,
revenue sharing seems to be getting a lot of buzz in a positive way. You know, I think the MML has done their job in educating, but what's your opinion on that?
I'll be curious to see if I'm lucky enough to stay. The governor's supposed to speak tomorrow at the conference.
I know.
Between 3 and 5 or something of that nature.
Too bad he couldn't get a live feed.
And, you know, she's going to be very general on a lot of her stuff still at this point. And what she wants and what the legislature are going to do, they have to work out a compromise, obviously, being in different parties. So it'll be just interesting to see how that dynamic works, which we haven't had in the last 8 years. I'm not overly optimistic with regards to it. I mean that seems to be one thing that's a constant throughout my career in Michigan, is there's talk about improving revenue sharing. And I've never really seen anything happen on it. So I'd like to think it's going to happen, but I can't get excited about it at this point.
Okay.
And one of our concerns right now, and I'm going to hopefully talk to, we're supposed to have the director of the Michigan Department of Transportation at our MML board meeting tomorrow morning, is this whole fix the roads proposal that's out there, and the concerns that communities like us in northern Michigan may not see much of any bang out of those additional bucks. And two, we might actually see less if they take a lot of the revenues out of Act 51 that they're talking about to balance the general fund. So we might actually see less road money coming in under that proposal. And if that's the case, that's just nuts.
That's scary.
Yeah. These are all uncertainties, and, you know, that's part of, I guess, one of the things I get used to in this position after a while is just dealing with uncertainty and trying to get us where we want to go through that maze.
Mike, what's the grant for the pavilion? I don't remember.
It's been to the council on that. Working with Dan Leonard of the MEDC. Remember we had that one grant that we tried for a number of years when we first started the pavilion, that they were going to come up with like a $500,000 grant. And that hinged in part because of we lost our low and moderate income, and they changed the priorities of what they were funding. So that disappeared. And Dan's been working ever since to try and get funding for that. And he found a new way through the MEDC processes to line up, and we have an active application. Probably went to the commission two and a half months ago to approve that.
To us?
Yes. To authorize us going forward on it.
Sure.
So anyway, it's like $408,515 that we apply, that we can use a lot of the work that's been done in the project already as the community's match. Yes.
I think it's been talked about so many times, and just kind of, I didn't think that.
I'm losing it, that's all I
want
to say.
I think it's just been talked about so much.
Okay. So, So they were hoping to let us know by March 7th about whether we were going to receive that. They asked for an extension until March 27th on that. They're still asking Barb's, but, you know, providing additional information. They keep asking for all sorts of stuff. So I'm hoping that we'll know by the end of the month, but it could still be pushed back. I've been telling, you know, Michelle Courtwright, you know, I'm optimistic on it, but, you know, obviously nothing's guaranteed.
Mm-hmm. So, for this fund balance that we're talking about,
yes.
So at the end of this year, you're predicting for next, we have a fund balance of $1,604,000. Why the decrease the following year? What are you anticipating there?
Yeah, hang on a sec. Let me get to that.
Are those related to items in the capital improvements plan?
No, it's more general than that. Basically, what that does is take a look at our $197,000 deficit that we've got going forward. Assuming that if nothing changes, that would be constant going forward. Adding in the additional, it's about $50,000 a year per year for a couple of years, and that it increases by a decreasing amount. I think it's like $5,000 the next year, then something after that. The contribution for MERS, well, and it shows you on the next page, kind of on that chart. Well, actually, two pages behind that graph. You'll see these numbers up here for MERS, where I've got an asterisk up at the mm-hmm. top there. Mm-hmm. I looked at those contributions and factored them in as well. Two pages on that. And then I also started putting back in the police car replacements, which are about another $48,000 for the first couple of them. Because Ford is phasing out their police interceptors car version that they have, and they're just going to SUVs. Mm-hmm. And we've run into a problem the last few years with the police department. With all the equipment that they have, and the new radios and all the stuff, there just isn't enough space in the front of the car for them to get in and out comfortably or safely. So it's just, it was kind of, because it's interesting, because when Jeff first got here, we had the one SUV, and we went away from those. Matter of fact, that's the one that the fire or the EMS department has now. And went to the Interceptors, and that worked out well, and then this ran up, so it's kind of like, he recommended going away from the SUVs, and now the situation has changed that he's taking us back to the SUVs.
The Expedition was just too big for what they needed, too costly to operate.
Yeah.
So these projections did not include capital road expenditures?
They include the normal capital roading.
That comes out of the general fund budget. Right?
If you look at that, we go back to the transfers thing, that mm-hmm. $800,000 that we're looking to transfer out this year,
it's pretty typical amount per year.
Yes. So we would continue to do those infrastructure improvements out of that. So if we found a way to fix the $200,000 this year and continuing years, that trend line would, instead of going down, it would, you know, it'd go down at a more gradual
rate.
Yes.
Right.
And if we get some of these additional grants, again, that'll put in at least a short-term blip for us, positive.
So on this page here, Mike, you were talking about the contributions.
Yes.
You know, the thing I just, you know, I understand kicking the can down the road, but, you know, we're paying all this money, and in 1 year, from $562,000 to $46,000.
Yes.
It seems like that could be spread out, you know, so from that point forward, it's just going to be $46,000 per year, or plus cost of living increases or something like
that.
Well,
we don't have cost of living increases built into our COLAs.
Okay. So it's just going to be $46,000 for me.
It'll be something small like that. It could actually be decreasing off of that as more and more of the retirees actually retire, and then the total number of people that are on the system and collecting out of it decreases over time after, you know, as people pass away and things of that nature. You're right. They're the ones that assign these numbers, and that is a huge jump. You think there might be some type of a more gradual system that they could come up with, but
I thought our auditor was saying that there's a reason why it's a required contribution or something.
I don't know.
Maybe
I remember we talked about
this 5-year thing based on the law. This law in Michigan said this is
by the time you have to have it accomplished by,
right.
And I could go back to the full actuarial to see if it spelled that in greater detail.
I thought that the communities were getting forced to bring their...
Within a certain time frame.
Within a certain time frame of having a certain percentage funded. But I just told you everything I know.
So the history...
Well, I could double check that, and then we make a note here. If there is something on that.
So the history of this fund balance of the $3 million was prior to paying cash for the DPW building, correct?
Correct.
And
yep.
Then it went up, and then it went down because we paid cash for the open space.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah, those are the two big bubbles.
And the reason it's not going up is because we have that $500,000 a year that one of the reasons, I guess.
Yes, yeah. Yeah. That's the biggest reason.
Wasn't that long ago we were paying nothing into MERS. It was just being funded by those employees who are working.
Right, well, that's
well, the different aspect.
You don't have as much people paying into the system, right?
Right, you have hardly anybody left.
Right,
correct. And to be candid with you, I mean, if we hadn't been looking to do a DPW facility or the open space purchase, and I guess somewhere in there we could factor in the marina too. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's not accounted for in here. If we were at, you know, $1.5 to $2 million, that'd be fine. We don't need to be up by three for any reason.
Right.
I mean, that peak is abnormally high. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that we need to be up there at some point.
But we had very specific goals to be together here.
Right. And the only one that really hasn't been completed yet would be the marina.
Marina, right.
Which potentially has its own funding source and is something, you know, if we had to, we could wait a few years on.
Yeah.
As long as, of course, get Barb in here and she'll tell you those docks are long past their prime and how long will they last.
Right, exactly. Right.
But that's something you can put a Band-Aid on.
Well, there's a reason for our decision to have a certain fund balance.
Yes.
And dipping substantially below that then puts us at risk.
It puts us at risk if some big upset happens.
Right.
If,
mostly
again,
the economy. Right?
The economy, or we got hit by a tornado or, you know, something
disaster.
Really catastrophic failed. Exactly what it would be, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And let's say this building burned down for something of that nature. Yeah, be insured, but we'd have additional costs or relocating or something of that nature that we'd have to come up with. So we're well insured, but there'd still be a hit.
Mm-hmm.
Just hope the sprinkler system works.
Yeah.
Pardon me?
Hope the sprinkler system works.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
Can I hit on another discussion point? You know, and we can come back to that.
I'm good.
Just another thing to keep in your bailiwick, and it's influenced a little bit in this year's budget. In the next 2 or 3 years, I anticipate that we're going to have kind of another little bubble of retirements coming forward, probably about 6 people in that time frame. And one of those persons is a double position.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't, you know, how long ago was it that we combined your position 19, into clerk treasurer?
2005.
You know, and whether we're going to be able to find somebody that has the skills to be able to do both of those or have to hire an additional person, that could have some financial implications with regards to that.
Did you get retired though?
she can do whatever she wants.
Well, I believe we have to vote on it. If we don't vote for it, I guess we're stuck. Here we are.
We did put a little bit of seed money, probably about $12,000 in there in the budget this year under general fund, so we could potentially hire. Probably anticipate that the deputy clerk, excuse me, deputy treasurer, would be the first one to retire, and we put in some money so we can kind of overlap those positions. And, you know, get some training to go on that for, you know, 2 or 3 months or so,
including the payout of her sick and vacation time.
Yeah, and those will be costly. So just to let you know that we're going to be dealing with that as well too, and we could find a couple things. Again, we'll have some payouts that we have to do with regards to people's banks. There may be an opportunity to reduce costs. Sometimes with new hires, we've been able to do that. But if the economy stays strong, one of the other issues we're going to find out is just struggle with is just finding quality people. And there has been some, there has been inflation in wage pressures with regards to that, which gets me to a related point and a memo I wanted to pass out with you so you can review it between now and our meeting on Thursday. Did I give you two?
You did.
I know you've seen this before, Cindy. I think there's at least three there, if you want one. Jeff is expressing, from the police department's perspective, some concerns with regards to other agencies or other departments that have superior wage and or benefit packages, actively recruiting some of our personnel. And his concern that we, you know, if something isn't done at some point, that there might be we may end up losing some people. That has happened in the past. I mean, that Fred Hasty went to the sheriff's department a number of years ago. But they have actively been making some improvement. On the positive side, the team that Jeff has created in the department is, I think, keeping people here maybe in some ways contrary to their own best financial interests. And we've got a great facility, great equipment, great camaraderie, great training, all that type of stuff. But he's concerned about it. The trick, and you know, and he proposes a couple ways of, you know, dealing with that. And I'll let you read that, and we can talk about it again on Thursday, or you can ask me if you got questions along the way. The trick is, how do you balance doing something here in a time of limited resources? And one of the things that's discussed in here is pension. That other communities are, and organizations are, you know, there's some that are still out there, and I don't know how they're doing it, are still offering a defined benefit contribution. That, you know, it's more likely going to have a bigger payout over time than a defined contribution one where people can invest themselves, which is more the standard and which is what we have for all our new employees now.
Well, that was going to be my question.
How do you address that? How do we address this without putting us right back into the same position that we're seeing us get ourselves out of in 2025? So you had a
That was my question. There are still people working here who are on defined benefits.
Yes. Okay. Yes.
Like you probably are. You've been
both of us are.
Okay.
Yeah. But it's fewer and fewer. How many do you think are left? It's less than 10.
It's less than 10.
I want to say 8 or so.
2 in the DPW, you, me, Michelle.
Okay, so 10 are still left.
3 in the
DPW. That might be on the high side, Sally.
Yeah.
2.
But it's people that are just kind of, you know, they're grandfathered into the system. Yeah. Did you say 10. Craig?
Craig, 1, 2, 3 in the PD.
Is Kevin?
Yeah. Kevin, Dan, and Craig. You, me, Shelley, Scott, 2 in the DPW, 9.
Okay, 10 was close. So, and there's some alternate solutions in there. But again, the two don't mix well. So, and in some, you know, and I'm not rooting for an economic downturn, which might solve some of these problems. I mean, one of the things that I'm super proud of, and we got a lot of good buzz back at the time of the recession is we didn't have to do we didn't have to lay anybody off. We didn't have to do any cuts. We were able to absorb. We did some reductions with regards to people that retired that we didn't fill positions back for.
Is that the first step in that graph? Would that have been how you were able to?
What year was that?
Oh, no, that's even earlier.
Yeah, that's 2001.
Were you able to do this at at a time you were actually increasing or holding steady the fund balance?
Do which?
Able to handle the recession without having to dip into the fund balance.
Oh, I didn't say I guess we really kind of wrote it out pretty well. Looking at 2008, we were actually slowly increasing it.
Right. Of course, the real impact of the recession didn't happen until later for us, right? It's delayed.
And you can see that really didn't affect us in a negative way with regards to the fund balance. Mm-hmm. I mean, we didn't suffer the financial devastation that a lot of places downstate had. I mean, our multi-tiered economy, commercial, industrial, residential, and vacation really kept us fairly well.
Mm-hmm. How many retired people are defined benefit still?
Oh. So the actual is 30?
I want to say that's about right. We'd have that information. We could get it for you. I don't know off the top of my head.
Including spouses.
Yeah.
Yep.
I know a little about this stuff from where
you know, speaking of Jeff's letter here, I mean, that's kind of across the board as you pertain to Cindy, replacing Cindy with skill. I think we've been very fortunate with our last two department heads, with Tim and Mark, are exceptional. And they're probably underpaid.
Yeah. I mean, that's something I'm going to want to address at some point with regards to Tim. And I think he's good where he is for this first year, but after that, I think I'm probably going to be in line. Or Sue's going to probably have, probably close to having some of his employees making more than he is.
But to get quality people at wages that we can afford is going to be across the board, not just the police department. That's my only statement.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things Jeff is talking about is, you know, geez, he'd like to add another employee. We've talked about adding different people in different positions here as well, too. I don't see that in the next few years. There's no way we can do it. I mean, another person's about another. You know, even if you're paying them, you know, you're paying them $40,000 or $50,000, you're looking at least $75,000 a person. And you've got the chart with regards to the payroll, and you can see what the totals are on the people. I just, you know, unless we come up with a new source of money or really change things around where we basically say we're not doing roads anymore or something of that nature and free up a whole bunch of money. I think we're kind of boxed for the next few years, frankly.
And that's going against the, I mean, last year Hugh said an assistant city manager, we've talked about a parks and rec director, we've talked about a mechanic. I mean, we've had this discussion every year. Yeah.
Well, I think especially like with the mechanic position, I think with Tim here, with his analytical skills, not so much for this year, but next year, we'll be able to get kind of more of an accurate assessment, more detailed assessment than we've gotten in the past with regards to, okay, here's how much we're spending to have work done by an outside firm or firms, you know, because they're having to pay overhead and all that type of stuff as well, too, versus us having somebody in-house doing that. That's something we've talked about. It's something that we, you know, other than anecdotally, haven't been able to provide up until this point. Again, I'm just very impressed with Tim's analytical skills and his approach. I think he's going to be giving us so much more. That's one question that I think he'll be able to answer for us probably a year out or so.
Which is good, because we never felt we had the data to make a
no, there wasn't
good decision. I mean, there was data there, but I don't know if it was.
It wasn't as tight as I'd like to see it. And I think he'll be able to tighten that up for us quite a bit. And if for some reason it does, you know, and I've always said, if somebody can demonstrate that it makes sense for us to hire another person in there, I'm open to having that discussion, both operationally and financially. Obviously, we've got to watch it financially more than operationally, I think, for the next couple of years, but cause I think we're getting by operationally.
And every year we've talked about it, the county, the school bus garage, the transit bus garage, all have full-time mechanics. There seems to be just huge potential for a cooperative mechanic.
Well, we had that discussion
we've had this
closely with the Charlevoix County Road Commission at the time Jim McCary, our last mechanic, was retiring, to see whether we could do something jointly with them. And it just didn't work out. They had enough to do, and the costs weren't there, and the cost savings weren't there. I mean,
yeah.
A lot of time right now, I mean, we take some of our equipment over to East Jordan, and their mechanic is able to do it, and it kind of helps supplements their position. And we believe there's a savings for us right now.
Sure.
So the other retirees would be John and Jeff, probably, in the next few years?
Let's see if I got them right.
Maybe.
I've got a list.
Yeah. Let's see if I'm right. John, Cindy, Michelle,
yeah.
Jeff,
yeah.
Craig,
yeah.
Tim,
some,
no. Tim Foss. Some,
no.
No?
I'm thinking 5 years. Okay. I'm not there yet.
Those are the ones that I came up with.
Pat Haver.
Oh, Pat.
So, and again, I'm getting inklings from these people. You know, I can't require them or force them to tell me what they're, you know, that gets into personnel requirements and that. But it's coming up from them often enough that that those are all realistic possibilities. So, yeah, we've got, at least three department heads.
Yeah.
Counting the two crowns that Cindy wears, you know, it's actually four department heads. You're not choking yourself, are you?
No, and I'm thinking about the crowns.
Yeah. Collins Darcy.
He's younger than me. He's quite a bit younger than me.
Yeah. Yeah. He and Rob are the next bubble in the DPW, and they're still relatively young.
Rob's 94. Yeah, he's 40. And then.
Well, I'm talking about they were both hired about within a year of each other. It seemed like pretty much the same seniority.
And Scott's not even talking about it, so.
McPherson.
Yeah. But like I've said, I'm giving a year's notice, so you have plenty of time.
But those are going to be huge changes for the organization. So, and it will have some financial implications. Is it going to move this needle much? I don't know. Mm-hmm. And I don't think so. And I'm not exactly sure which way. It could go either way. Mm-hmm. So, but I just wanted you to be aware of that as well, too. Let's see. Those are the main points. We've got, I should also mention with regards to personnel, we've got negotiations going on, or getting ready to get started with the AFSCME bargaining unit, which represents the workers in the DPW and the wastewater department. Their contract expires March 31st, I think it is. So we're doing an extension. We'll be negotiating that after spring break and stuff. The budget as proposed for budgetary purposes shows a 3% increase in there. I think that might be a little, there may be some room to maneuver that down. But again, that starts conflicting with this issue about, So there's some potential opportunities as well there, too.
You know, looking at the wages, it seems like Barb is severely underpaid compared to other people, just with my gut reaction.
There are two people that I'm proposing for increases in this budget above and beyond the normal percentage increase. One is Barb, and I believe it's $1,200 increase this time. And another one is Pat,
Jane.
Excuse me, Jane, thank you, at a $1,000 increase on that. That gets them in line. It puts Barb and Michelle pretty much at the same point in their compensation, and they both do, you know, additional things external. And Jane, that pretty much puts her on a par with Pat in that. And those are kind of at somewhat different tiers. I wouldn't be surprised to see something further with Barb in the future, but not at this point. So I'm trying to address that within the realm of here, but you know, that's an extra $2,200 hit to the budget, plus a little bit more on fringe as well.
You know, she just does so much, you know, yep. The IT, the marina, you know, yours, you know, and like Kelsey's making more money than she is.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Like that being
I look at that. And we've done, you know, a couple bumps to Barb up along the years as well, too. I think the last one was a couple years ago now, though. Mm-hmm. I think that one was a $5,000 increase at that time.
So our general revenue goes up, I read it in here, 2.3%?
2.4 this year.
2.4, okay.
And we did have a little bump in taxable value this year.
Okay.
So
if the revenue goes up 2.4, and generally we give all 30 to 40 employees a 2 to 3%, does that kind of balance itself? See what I'm saying? And we don't have many sources of revenue.
Is the increase covered by the increase in...
Yeah, the wages increase covered by the increase in revenue.
Right.
Yeah.
Thinking. Yeah.
Okay.
I think if you
that'd be interesting.
If you look at the wages and the fringe benefit packages, especially on the health insurance side of it, I'm not sure if it does.
Okay.
Because those have been, you know, moderate at
You've
like...
Been lucky.
Yeah, I mean, what have they been, around 5%, 4 or 5%?
Or less.
How low have they gone?
Well, we had a slight decrease. They had a, like, 0.02% decrease.
How long ago was that?
2 years ago.
Okay.
Put enough zeros in here.
You know,
if we're washing, we're doing good.
That's my point. That's a good thing because I philosophically believe that they all deserve the 2-3%. I mean, the cost of living goes up that much. But, you know, over 10 years, that's a 30% raise.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Oh, sure. And what, of course, you got to look at what inflation is over that same time period.
Doesn't balance, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because we don't have any other sources of revenue.
Well, I think there's still a structural problem with property taxes is that our inflation rate is higher than the consumer price index, right?
Yes.
And so we're always...
Yeah.
We have been. That's just... Headley, I think, you know, just always battling the increased cost, increasing faster than we can bring in new money.
And legislatively, they're all talking about it, but doing nothing.
With regards to the Headley and...
Headley and Proposition
A. Yeah.
But there was some interesting stuff, well, that was it was an aside about the Mackinac Center down in, is that what they're called?
Yeah.
One of their staff members saying, hey, you know, it would certainly make sense to fix Headley so communities aren't penalized when for something that was unanticipated by Headley, which is the drop in, rapid drop in property values.
Mm-hmm. And not being able to gain
and
that back.
And not being able to get it back.
When
things turn around, right.
Of course, a 3% increase per year.
Well,
when you think about... The 3% is on a higher figure every year, too. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, the amount.
Yeah.
Percentage, right. That's
right.
Right. And if you're on a fixed income,
percentage
that doesn't help
is on a higher amount each time.
Did you have other points you wanted to...
No, that's pretty much...
I did have one thing that I would like to ask that... department heads and yourself address on Wednesday or Thursday when we go over this, and we have all of the city goals.
Yes.
And I wonder if it's fair to ask in their budget proposals how they've accounted for items within that would require a little bit of, I don't think anything's a large ticket item.
Yeah.
But it'd certainly be nice to hear we talked about, the forecast model. Is that going to require a little bit of an investment in order to come up with that? I'm not asking to answer that now, but that's
yes. Yes, nice those are great questions.
And then
because I looked through. That's one of the reasons it's included, because I made sure I looked through it, and nothing jumped out at me with regards to. I thought the budget covered it, but those are fair questions I asked.
Yeah, and I didn't see where in the budget that's that's covered, like the website thing, and then what else could be in there, you know? And again, a lot of these are not cost items; they're action items.
Yes.
Don't have a budget implication.
And that's there was.
Sure, like to see the or hear about how that's accounted for in the budget.
Yep. Good point.
I agree.
I had that marked too.
We're just like
where,
all on the
where
same
in the budget is that?
Yeah.
Well, I didn't even look at it as a budget. I was like went through here and I go, well, yeah, we need to update soon. I mean, straight through
all these
six.
Dates on there. Yep. Yeah. Dates on there. So.
Yeah. We've got our first review coming up in April.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cindy, I was going to ask you a question about the assessing. Has there been any bombs dropping out there with a new assessor and property owners?
Well, there was the one bomb last fall.
Which bomb was that?
That was the bomb of the uncappings. That didn't take place.
Yeah, the previous assessor wasn't up to date in their paperwork.
Oh, wasn't uncapping?
They didn't do the uncappings in there. We had over about 40. Charlevoix had some, and so did the city of East Jordan. So those had to be caught up. So people had to were billed for. We could only go back 2 years. So that's been resolved. We're having a lot of discussion. Of course, board review is happening right now. The state came up with a new manual, and they update their manual of rates every 10 years. Well, this, is, of course, is the 10 years. So a lot of the SAVs are increasing because the costs are, you know, $125 compared to $110 per foot based on what type of construction. That's just an example. So we're seeing a lot of those concerns come in. But really not any bombs. I know... other than the big one, they will be and are looking at individual homes, so they're going to be assessing, spending more time making sure the records are truly accurate. So,
do you have more people scheduled for the board of review?
It's about the same. It's about the same. We have a stack of mail. A lot of it has to do with personal property statements that were mailed out on time, but they didn't get to the county on time because they're postmarked correctly, but after there's a cutoff of the 20th of February that the county just takes that roll and goes with it, but you can still correct those. And I'm talking about the $80,000 limit. We'll have a lot of those to act on later on today. But no, we're not seeing any real bombs. So.
Is the new appointee working out good?
Yes.
New assessor.
Yeah.
They're doing an excellent job.
Not I'm thinking of board of reviews.
Oh, that I can't answer.
Good questions from...
Yeah,
good. But you're saying our new assessors...
Yeah, the assessing team, Nick and Joe are doing a great job.
Very responsive.
Yeah.
Were one of those houses included in the 40 or whatever, one out by the city limits on Lakeshore?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure of it. Yeah, we got beat up. Rightfully so. We just took it. Apologized and took it.
Okay. Well, actually, that's more of a hit up for us than it is for the individual taxpayer. That's foregone revenue that should have been caught at that time.
Right.
I mean, the taxpayers may be upset that they're getting notices late.
Yeah.
But they got the benefit of not having that uncapping take place for a number of years. So it financially worked out for their advantage.
Sometimes, I mean, we could only go back 2 years, and some of them were 3 or 4 years old.
Yeah.
So, you know, it could, if in certain cases, it was $10,000 a year. That was ugly.
Yeah, I was somewhere and started talking, and sooner didn't take long. And the temperature was rising a little bit, and I didn't have the foggiest idea what they were talking about.
And I get it. I understand their frustration.
It was a procedural mess up that wasn't followed on our end.
Yeah,
unfortunately.
Right. I understand it. But the state law doesn't give us any right to say, oh, no, that's okay. It was our fault.
We can forgive it forever. No. We
can't.
Yeah, two wrongs don't make a right, so to speak. They just got the benefit for it of whatever year it was. And they may, the problem for them is they may have just kind of say, hey, here's my new normal, and not figured that in. They should have known, but.
Yeah.
And I, just for your info, after Joe and Nick started, I basically asked them, okay, how could we have caught that, or how, you know, and they didn't have a good answer for me, because I felt, you know, that's something we'd like to catch. And unless you have another assessor come in and assess your assessing, they didn't have a solution for you,
for us. And it wasn't enough to be alarming.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, we were kind of moving up, but it wasn't enough to be alarming.
Yeah.
Like to raise a flag that something was
right.
Flag.
Yeah. Yeah, because we didn't get any, ultimately it's on us, but the county didn't say anything, the state didn't say anything.
But there wouldn't have any, how would they have been able to flag it?
No, the only thing that was weird is we didn't have, the last 2 years, we had very few board review appointments or petitions to act. That was weird.
Yeah. Oh.
And right. Because I've been doing that part of it since 1995, so that was odd.
Hmm. So what do you think on the board review? Things that you're seeing, how many do you think are from the uncapping, or how many are from this new state chart, or is there some other thing that they're mainly
looking
bringing
like it's
in?
From the new state chart.
That's mainly what's bringing, and we just have to do that.
We have to do that. Mm-hmm. We have to do that.
But based on what they're doing now, I think our records are going to be more and more precise and accurate as we go forward.
I heard my neighbor was screaming, but he hasn't knocked on my door yet, so.
Well, my dog hasn't beat his dog up lately, so.
What neighbor's that?
Rexford's, big poodle.
He said he would be appealing, so the board will hear that.
He did have a dog.
What would be the benefit of appealing because your SCV goes up, because you're... still limited in what your tax bill got.
You know, there's still some people out there who want to keep that SCV low because they're thinking that what if Proposal A goes away and what do we do if my assessment is way up here? There's still that thought process out there. You know, I'm confident enough to know how it happened and what's happened in many years since that I want my assessment to go up. I want my home
value of my house to go up.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat as you.
I like to see it go up.
Yeah,
and mine went down this year. And I think a lot of it has to do with, you know, the age of your home. And, you know, my home's a lot older. A part of it is older than my neighbor's. So.
Hmm. Well, are there questions or comments or concerns?
Do we want to talk about specific things or just in general?
Hey, whatever you want to talk about.
I was that $250,000 for the Terrace Cedar Street grant.
Yeah.
So if we don't get that this year, we're eligible to try again next year, right?
Yeah. So we could postpone one of the projects if we wanted to. That's an option. And to be candid, you know, going forward on this budget doesn't prevent us from making those determinations. We're going to be getting the bids in, so we'll see how those come back. And we won't know until, we're thinking until May, whether we get the grant or not. But, you know, based on what we find out that time, we could have that discussion and say, okay, maybe we ought to hold back on it. Mm-hmm. The issue that we've got to watch for is whatever project you've got going forward, whether that's going to be competitive and whether it's sized right to qualify for the match. Mm-hmm. So. And the only portion that's eligible for the grant is the actual amount of road work that's being done. It doesn't pay for the water or the sewer lines or the infrastructure that goes underneath it as well. So we're fortunate this project was big enough that allowed us to apply for the whole $250,000. If we moved one of those projects forward a year or something like that, we might be applying for a smaller grant. It doesn't mean that we could apply for the $250,000 for, you know, one of those streets if we decide to go forward with one of them. We could push them both back, though, and try again as well, too, depending on what we hear as to if we can figure out why were we not successful. Does it make sense? Because the other part you have to weigh against that is, Okay, if we don't do the project this year and we push it off a year, it's probably going to cost more.
Yeah, right, right. The other thing I was wondering is the bathrooms, the Rivermouth bathrooms, did that get postponed and
yes.
for a few years with the possibility of the grant for some water or improvements there, whatever that.
But I think it's postponed right now because there just isn't money to come up with it right now.
Yeah, that, I did see it in the capital improvements plan, but not till 2021 or two.
Well, we're looking at two things there. One, just the overall financial situation, and two, we're looking to see if there's a way to combine that with improvements in the pump house facility that weren't being discussed previously that kind of come up now, especially with putting in electrical generation and things of that nature that could benefit the pump house, the bathrooms, and the downtown so that, like, when the lights go out, we don't lose our traffic signals and things of that nature. We could, you know, and then have bathrooms for the public to go to in case there's an overall community outage. We've been trying to build in those redundancies. So whether that's a priority or whether that's something that say, oh, geez, that's nice, but we don't need to spend money on that just to watch our money's here. We can push that back. So there were a couple reasons why. One, we didn't get the grant.
Right.
Two, our financial situation overall. And three, the possible combination with some additional efforts at the pump house itself.
Now, I haven't been in it recently, but didn't we do some improvements last year, just mostly cosmetically?
Yeah, I mean, it's better. It's not as bad as it was. And we also, when Mike Wiesner was here, one of the problems has not only been appearance-wise, but functionally with regards to the drain line is pretty flat in there and it clogs mm-hmm. pretty easy. And that's been a reoccurring problem over the years. And you really have to get in and tear out the bathroom floors to get in there and fix it right. I'm going to have to tell you now. I probably told you before, but I just think it's so funny that here we have a bathroom right next to one of our main pump stations to handle all the sewage. And that pipe is so convoluted about how it comes out the side of the building, around to the street, and then around back. And our plan to fix that, and it doesn't work, and our plan to fix it is we could just barrel right through the building and drop the sewage right down into the mm-hmm. into the vault and have tons of capacity. Anyway, so that's just kind of ironic. I don't know why they did that the way they did. But anyway.
Isn't that on the other side of the river?
No. Okay. No, it's all, everything's all on. Right there. They're right next, they're abutting. The brick portion of it is the pump house building. Wow. The one that's closest to the street. I mean, if you go in, there's that one front door and you got the lacy curtains in there. You go in there and it's like 2.5 to 3 stories down. And there's plenty of room to drop the sewage. So.
And legal?
Oh, gosh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, that's where the pump station there.
Yeah. Right. I mean.
Well, but to do it right, we have to tear out the floors and the bathrooms and all that type of stuff. A short-term band-aid that we put on that to help reduce our costs when Mike Wiesner was here is we bought one of our own Roto-Rooter things, so we can just call in our crews to do it rather than having to call, you know, some plumber or something like that charged us an arm and a leg to do it. So
they were there just a couple weeks ago.
Who?
A subcontractor.
That was working on the pump house on that pump that was on the inside. That had nothing to do with the bathroom operation.
Good, okay.
That was the Rivermouth pump that I've been reporting on that had been bad.
Because my comments last year was you pay Roto-Rooter 10 times a year, you might as well just tear up the floor, it'd be cheaper.
Well,
it's getting to that point.
Yeah, and what we've done to save that in the meantime, without tearing up the floors, we bought the Roto-Rooter machine okay. that we can use that on other public facilities as well.
It's hard.
So.
But at some point, it's a question, is it maintenance or is it build new? When the maintenance gets higher than reasonable.
And can I kind of jump off on a tangent on that a little bit? It's an unknown issue and it really isn't addressed in the budget because it was coming up at the last minute. Is just, we may be the proud possessors of the Chamber of Commerce building shortly.
Do we have to take
it? It's on our property.
It's ours.
We own it. We could, if we really wanted to do it, say, you know, this is your albatross, you deal with it, and return the site to what it was like when you get when we gave it to you back in the 40s, which was without that building. We could basically tell them, you either fix it, return it to us in good condition, completely fixed, which they don't have the money for, and if they could, they'd probably do that anyway and stay where they are, but plus the size issue. So they can either fix it or tear it down. And neither of those I see as viable options, either economically for the chamber or politically for the community. There's a lot of sentiment with regards to that building. And we have had discussions before about picking it up and moving it to other locations. I know Riverside Park was one of them. At some point, as a kind of a headquarters for the Friends of the Boyne River, I don't know if they have the finances to support any of that or if they really have a need. They seem to be happy meeting here in this building as we go forward. But that could be a little bit of a, that's a cost that we haven't budgeted that we haven't budgeted anywhere for.
Is that building going to add to our bottom line as an asset or a liability?
It's a liability. We're in the process right now. Kelsey is checking with the state to see what grant opportunities there might be for that. When we're in here in this room talking about certified local governments recently, that's an opportunity that grant funds through that program might be helpful for that building like they were for the 1910 building. I also see that tying into the discussion with regards to the Rivermouth restrooms. Because they're, depending on what our vision is for that building sometime in the future, we may want to put a handicap bathroom in there to service Sunset Park. It'd be more convenient, and I could see maybe using a third or a half of that building to put that in, and having a bathroom right there. And then the other half potentially being used as a unstaffed visitor center, or, you know, do we want to put a splash park or a splash pad there? And you use it as some type of a house for that, or it could have been a warming house for an ice rink, or you know, there's lots of options, but those all mean expenses for us that we don't have built into the budget.
I remember when I was helping to facilitate discussions for the chamber, that building came up every year, and one of the big things was the inadequate nature of the electrical system in it. So all sorts of stuff in that building that are minefields when it comes to public use.
Well, yes and no. I mean, we've got, if you drive on your way home today, I think it'll apply for all of you, as you go by the Chamber of Commerce, you'll see this big gray panel out there. Yeah. That's our electrical panel. We got all the power you could ever need for that building,
right,
if they wired it right.
If they wired it right.
But that's, wiring it right costs money. And putting in a bathroom costs money, or just keeping it. Their utility expenses have been about $1,500 a year. If we just, if we just put a lock on the front door and let it open during daylight hours so people could go, and let's say we set it up with a bunch of shelves and people could get information racks, people could wander in there and that type of stuff. You know, we got $1,500 to do that. Mm-hmm. So.
Do they plan on being a visitor center still when they move?
Well, they better, because they're under contract with us to provide those services. So,
that,
but
that $5,000 or whatever is that?
Well, I think there's three from the city through the EDC, LDFA, and another three, and these may be ballpark numbers, from the Main Street organization. So it seems like it's about six split between those two. It doesn't come directly out of the general fund at this point. But our contract with them, which is ancient, does spell out that responsibility still.
Does the chamber have a new home in mind?
Yes.
But aren't they looking at the old RE/MAX building?
I'm not at liberty to say about that, and that's
right.
They may be making an announcement
but
shortly.
Anyhow, they're on it. They're not just looking to move out. They haven't something else.
Oh, no. They've been, especially, I think, Kim. I mean,
Ashley.
Thank you. Was very seriously looking at making some good progress. And I think they were really looking at possibly building a new facility.
Oh, really?
Either at that site, because we actually staked out some potential, and, that had to. We'd have to have some serious discussions about view corridors and whether we wanted to expand. But I thought there was some opportunity there. It's just, where do they come up with the money for that?
Right, right.
I mean, they were getting, they had some discussions. They thought they could do something for a couple hundred thousand. And I look at what our expenses have been for the pavilion, and, you know, there's no way that I thought they could do that. So anyway, we may be given a gift of, I'm not sure how much value. But there is a lot of public sentiment with regards to it. It is part of the culture and the character of Boyne City, and, you know, I want to make sure that we, you know, give those things due consideration. But it's something that's being put on our plate at a time that isn't necessarily the most convenient.
Oh, during those blizzards, it was just a postcard with the snow in the front of it.
Oh, it's beautiful.
Oh, it's beautiful. But if we were to take possession of that, so do you believe that we could keep the building at least from deteriorating further at a reasonable cost? Or is this going to be a financial drag?
When they first started getting serious in this discussion, since Kim got here, I asked her for utility information, and I also asked her for they were having a building inspection assessment on it. Because I've seen comments in their minutes going back until at least 20 years where Nord Schroeder, a local builder, was evaluated the building and said it should be torn down. Mm-hmm. Well, obviously it lasted 20 years, and I don't think it's in any danger of falling down. It's just, especially the bottom logs are slowly mm-hmm. rotting away.
Mm-hmm. That's what it's gonna end.
They just put a brand new roof on it, that metal roof.
Oh, right.
Yeah, but you can see rotting those logs just driving by.
Oh yeah, the ends of them are exposed.
Yeah.
But, you know, you get enough wood filler or putty or DAP, you can fix that.
Yeah, yeah.
So do they plan on like having a community discussion about moving out of there, or is that going to be up to the city since we'll have ownership of the building to deal with the sentimental aspects that you're talking about?
I think we're beginning to be given a gift that we're going to have to work through with the community. They were talking about potentially having, this was back when Ashley was here, if they were going to be going to fundraising and things of that nature, having a real discussion with the community about the why they needed to make a change.
Yeah, right.
And, you know, part of it goes back to the guts of the building with regards to its electrical, and, you know, they haven't had hot water there for I don't know how long. You know, with regards to the rotted logs and then just too small. The initial problems with the building and then just the operational, that they just need a bigger space.
Yeah.
What is the wiring in there now? I mean, is it old?
It's a combination of stuff. It's not that bad. It's just
black coated.
I'm assuming most of it's in pretty good shape. I haven't gone in and inspected it myself. I mean, they're not popping fuses all the time unless they try and turn their hot water heater back on. I think they've got a problem with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. What kind of
fuses? If you plug in the hot water heater, something, the furnace goes out or blows a fuse or something like that.
Oh.
I went in and visited with Kim just to understand what, after you set that out.
Would it be fair in that transaction to ask the chamber for some funds to help at least stabilize the building? Because in some respects, the building's in the conditions it's in because over a period of years, the chamber really didn't have the resources, didn't expend the resources to keep it up to a standard that it should have been kept at. But yet we're accepting it. Is that a fair to enter into the negotiation? Say, we're
yes.
getting this gift,
yeah.
But you know, if we get the gift, plus we need to address some issues there to make sure the building is stable.
And Kim they're not in great financial shape either. I think they have like $25,000 or $30,000 in their building fund, and that's a guesstimate. Mm-hmm. Moving to a new location, assuming that's what they're going to do, they're going to have rent costs that they haven't had. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've been very generous in that. Mm-hmm. I mean, we haven't even collected the dollar a year. We pick up their trash and other services that aren't really called. I mean, we insure the building, all the stuff, and that we've kind of accumulated that stuff over years. I don't know exactly why some of it we do, but we have. So I think it's fair to ask them for that. Mm-hmm. They aren't going to have the resources, I don't think. Other than that $25,000, Kim has said that you know they'd love to help us with regards to maybe sweat equity or mm-hmm. volunteers type of stuff.
Fair
enough. Maybe some of their chamber members have something to do for it. Mm-hmm. And I think we have to have a community discussion, figuring out okay if they move out, what next for the chamber building.
So it truly is a liability.
Yeah.
Cute, but
yeah.
Cute, yeah.
I'm going to step out and use the restroom real quick. Mm-hmm. Get another glass of water.
Yep.
Perpetual circle. I'll be right back.
There's no clock in here.
3:22. 3:22. Bad cough, Cindy?
I went to Quick Care this morning and it's a cold. And
no bronchial thing?
No, they listen to everything. She did give me Augmentin, just, you know, because it's been 7 days.
Yeah, it's coming from way down there too, it sounds
like. It doesn't feel like it. She listened, my lungs sounded good, and I just was frustrated because I couldn't do anything this weekend. It was so nice out.
So when are you leaving?
Oh, we're not leaving till the end of April.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Katie, Big Sky's open till the 22nd, I believe, so we won't leave until...
Where are you going?
Gulf Shores. Oh. We're all going to meet. We pick a place every year and we spend a week together and eat, lay on the beach.
Gulf Shores?
Never been to Gulf Shores.
Oh, you'll enjoy it.
It's Alabama, though, for God's sake.
Well, it's a gorgeous beach.
But it's a beach.
Well, the beaches are nice.
Oh, yeah, it's gorgeous. We just cross over to Pensacola for good food.
And Kate's going to fly into Pensacola, so...
Yeah. Got a cute story with you.